Because really, in this moment, the question is not, shall I succeed? Shall I fail? Oh, you know, yeah, I think I'll succeed. How do you do that? You can't do it. That's not what's in front of you. What's in front of you is always some specific, concrete task that has to be done, which is going to be followed by another one. Plus, the more you define your life merely by that effort, the more fun you have. And the more you can always, and the more you can ride the waves. Because if it goes well, fine. If it goes badly, fine. It's still just exactly what's in front of you to do. Do you see how different that is? And that also keeps us out of the debilitating, scattering energy of emotional ups and downs, and allows us, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do right here in this moment, just day after day? Yes.
I had no problem with the doing the task. My problem is, after reading this and thinking about it, and thinking about my life, is that I'm very curious. I invent things, and I just file another patent. But so the problem I have is really sorting through all the stuff and picking out the things. So I do work hard here, and then I work hard here, and I work hard here. And, you know, I think that I would benefit from more focus, but it's something that I'm so drawn to so many things and with such enthusiasm that I find it difficult.
Your problem in life is not generating enthusiasm.
Pardon?
I said your problem in life is not enthusiasm. I mean, there's plenty of that. Yeah.
No, and plenty of creativity and ideas and all that.
But this is how Swami Kriyananda has solved that problem. And he points out that many or most multi-talented people don't necessarily accomplish that much in any field. Mm-hmm. And Swami himself is multi-talented, a brilliant writer, a musician, a singer, he's a good photographer, he's not bad at architecture, he's an art administrator. He says his technique is concentration. And really profound concentration, as he puts it, when he's writing a book, he just never thinks about music, and if it should cross his mind, he actually even says he can't imagine how a person could write a single melody while he's writing a book. Because he just defines himself so completely, but until whatever that thrust of energy has reached a natural conclusion, and it's usually that he's finished the book.
But how does he pick the book instead of the song to focus on
music? Number one is faith that there's enough opportunity to do everything. Mm-hmm. See, part of the anxiety of doing this instead of that is fear. Oh, but I'll never get to that.
Mm. Right. But you'll lose that opportunity.
But you'll lose that opportunity. So part of it is just the calm realization that I'm not doing this out of ego. I'm doing this because it's there to be done, and if it's there to be done, it'll wait for me. Mm-hmm. You know, just an appreciation that the ideas flow in rather than I'm creating them. I mean, you can make a note. You know, make a note about something, but if you, I'm sure you've discovered, if you allow your mind to flip from thing to thing, it never goes deep. And he just says, I mean, that's simply what he says. When I'm doing one thing, that's all I do. And I don't do other things simultaneously. Now, sometimes he may stop for 3 days and do something else, but when he stops for 3 days, that's all he does. And he mentions in this book, and I it's very interesting, you have to make a practice of doing one thing at a time. And ever since I've been reading that, I just watch myself, because it's sort of a joke. After I'm finished cooking, every cabinet and every drawer in our kitchen is open about an inch and a half. Because I never actually close anything. You know, before I actually close it, I go off and do something else. Now, that's not so terrible. I just go through and close it all at the end. But it is also symptomatic of the fact that I tend to be on to the next thing before I finish this one. And it's not a virtue. Because it's indicative of the fact that the mind is too lightweight. And so instead of Henry trying to sort of grab it in its massive form, start grabbing it in its small form. Mm-hmm. You know, completely. I remember, I mean, I know many of you will laugh at this because this is so common, but David was interested, there was some conversation about David getting some kind of hands-free telephone. And Swami heard that, and Swami's answer was, why? He said, so that you can do something else while you should be talking on the phone. Of course, that's why you get it, so that you can do two things at the same time. But of course, I mean, I know sometimes when I've talked to David and he's at home at his desk, I can feel that he's doing something else. And I'll say, are you doing something else? You know, like, stop it. Talk to me. Because I can tell you're not concentrating. And you can tell when you're talking to other people on the phone. And I mean, I'm tempted to. I'm talking to someone on the phone. And like, gosh, I can check my email at the same time. And I just feel myself drifting out of the conversation. And I'm saying, yeah, sure. But you're not. You're not doing it. And it's all pervasive in our culture to not concentrate.
Multitasking.
Yeah,
yes. It's like, it's supposed to be a good thing.
But it isn't, because it weakens your willpower profoundly, because you get out of the habit of really putting all your will into anything that you do. Swamiji is really impressive in his concentration. And when he talks to you, he stops doing whatever else he's doing. And when he's doing something else, I mean, you know, he won't divide his concentration. And you can see it's a deliberate practice of his. But he accomplishes more, not less. Yeah.
I think I certainly understand it, and I think that's something that I clearly need to work on. But the problem, the thing I'm grappling, I happen to be at this point in my life where probably like a lot of 53-year-olds that, you know, okay, what do I do next?
Now that I'm grown up.
Yeah, and yet I still have to make an income. I've still got two kids, you know. I mean, so that influences things. But unfortunately, I'm in a position where I've got a little time to figure this out. But it could go so many different ways, and it's like, well, how do I pick? You know, and I'm still struggling with how do I pick and really make the commitment to, you know, because it is going to take some commitment too.
The question you're actually asking is, how do you get intuitive guidance?
Yeah.
Which is a very good question, but a bigger question than I could answer here. But there's a couple of really good tapes out there.
Okay.
And I would really suggest you read one. Listen to one or two, because it... But a lot of it is recognizing, and I'll just give a short answer because it's relevant. Probably doesn't matter a lot what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You think it matters a lot. Mm-hmm. So you partly just, at a certain point, just have to start getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
With anything that makes sense. There comes a certain point where it's better to do something rather than continually waiting to decide.
Right.
But the best answer really is to... I know...
Do you have a tape?
Yeah, there's a couple out there I can point to. This woman told me a very interesting story. She's a woman in our church, and she went to India and adopted a baby. And they actually brought her three babies. She had to choose the baby. She was telling me the story, and she said, you know... She said other women who had done the same thing said, if you get quiet enough, the baby that's yours will tell you.
Oh.
And so she went and met the babies and was just, she said, a total wreck. She didn't know what to do. She went back to the hotel. She had a tape of Robert chanting and some tape of some class that I'd given that she really liked. She sat by the pool in the hotel, listened to the whole talk that I'd given. I don't remember what the subject was. Listened to Robert chant. And basically got out of her brain and just got more into her spine. She got out of her emotions. Her emotions were like this. And she just got out of them, got into the center of the tree. She went, she held the three babies, and one baby said, "Mine! You're mine! I belong to you!" And she said it was just as clear as if the child was dead. You know, it's just like she didn't really have to do anything. She had to stop doing so much. You know, because it was there, it was destiny. You know, she was going to bring home one of those children and it was going to be her. But she didn't have the slightest doubt once she stopped, got into her center. Then the baby just said, "Take me home, I'm yours."
Mm-hmm.
And so your job will find you when,
once I get centered.
Once you get centered. So the mm-hmm. job is less to find the job and more to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to do nothing, because you have to take the enormous energy that you want to use running in circles and use all of that energy to be perfectly still.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dynamic, you know. And I don't mean you're inactive. You can be very active, but you're perfectly still. And you're just doing it because it'll tell you. Right? Oh, is that easy?
No.
But you practice when it is easier. You practice in all those little tiny ways when you allow yourself, your concentration to slip and yourself to get all fuddled-duddled, and when there's much less at stake. should I have the tuna? Should I have the eggs? Should I have the tuna? Should I have the eggs? You know, it's like all the time. I'm just running like this. I'm standing by the refrigerator. What should I eat? What should I eat? I don't know. Should I eat this? Should I eat this? Should I eat this? Like nothing. Just stand still. Just stand still. Just be quiet. Oh, just do this. You know, it's just like it's never, the decision isn't a problem if you're not all scattered. And that's why Swamiji says in here, you know, practice meditation, bring your energy habitually to this point. He says, and you'll find that you can focus and solve things in minutes that might literally take other people weeks. Well, they researched and read and tried to know this and tried to know that. But you know, just gradually over a long time, find it where if you're very concentrated, you just go right to it.
Asha?
Yeah.
Also, I find it's not just the concentration, it's the discipline to not be distracted by these crisis management people that want to interrupt you, too. You know, to stay focused and complete it.
Yeah, just stay focused and complete it. Get that much more done. Go into what we call Krishna time. On Molly Davey gave us that. I told you all that before about Krishna time. It's fine. This will get done. You know, or it won't. I've just read this wonderful book about Disraeli, who was the Prime Minister of England in the last century. Confidant of Queen Victoria. It's a very interesting biography. I only knew his name. But what was so fun about it is a lot of things happened in his life that were profound and important and dynamic and all that. But they're all over. They're all finished. You know what I mean? It's like it was so exciting and so breathtaking and so important at the time. But now it's not. And I thought, I think there's a little clue here. And Disraeli was a marvelous politician, and he trained himself. I mean, the House of Commons in England is a party give and take. And because he was a Jew and a rebel in a lot of ways, he was the unquestioned leader because he was so dynamic. But he trained himself to be able to sit absolutely still. So he would deliver these fantastic addresses, and then everybody would yell and scream and vilify him and call him an idiot and all these things, and he would just sit. He wouldn't just focus, he would sit motionless. But I thought, what a marvelous discipline to just train yourself to sit motionless. Then he was perfectly wide awake, but why dissipate all his energy? And he needed to, because, you know, he needed to have an invincible persona. Because of the world that he was living in. But it just intrigued me a great deal to start thinking about that. Well, let's take a look at that. Speaking of some emotion, let's let you move on. Okay. Now, Rick made a very interesting point, which was talking about the difference between emotion and calm feeling. And it has to do with Swamiji's music. I think I talked in here about my experience of Barbara Streisand singing. Was it in this class that I talked about that? Where I was living. Is this a yes or a no in my head?
No, I think so. Class? Well, I've heard it, but I don't know where it's
okay. Well, bear with me. I lived in Ananda Village from 1971 until 1986, or 87 when we moved here. And from 71 until the early 80s. Especially, we were very, very isolated. And then I began to just travel more and be out in the world a little bit more. And we didn't have electricity and we weren't interested. So, you know, whole vast, I'll hear many people make references to just vast parts of popular culture that just went right by and never knew they were there. I knew Barbara Streisand existed, because we weren't that isolated, but I didn't really quite know what she ever sounded like until many years after she was very popular. I watched the movie Lentil, I was going to say. It was a story about a woman who became a teeny-weeny. She was a kosher legume. Imagine what it is when you learn a language. This is slightly off color, but it was so funny when Rosanna, Swamiji's wife from Italy, when she was having to deal with the beds, and she was coming close to the question of sheets. When she got closer and closer to the word, she said, I get very nervous when I get close to the word. So I taught her the word bedding. Because we just slipped right in. She also was talking once about how there was a lot of problem at the airport. They couldn't land because there were so many frogs on the runway. Oh, wow. Because of the fog on the runway. So Barbara Streisand was not a Lake Cooper, she was a Yentl. And you know, she's a very charismatic singer. She does what she does exceedingly well. So when you see people who do it exceedingly well, you kind of get the picture. Swamiji remarked about Michael Jackson, whom he doesn't care for his music at all, but he's aware of the fact that Michael Jackson does exactly what he sets out to do. And does it perfectly. He knows exactly what he has crystal clarity about his intention, and he does it perfectly. It may not be something that you yourself want to do. Maybe you do like it, but you have to admire it. You know. Well, Barbara Streisand is like that, and what she does or did in that movie, especially, and it's you know, she just really stirred up your heart. I hear these songs, and it just you know, sort of makes you feel like that. That's how they sing them. It's almost like this, like you just feel you're just being pulled and pulled and pulled, and then it ends. Mm-hmm. And there you are, you're right there. And then what would happen is you go. And that's why you get into these things and you really love them, but then you fall apart afterwards. You can't go anywhere with it. Because it just pulls your emotions out, not up. And it doesn't resolve it in any kind of superconscious experience. It just makes you long for something.